We should just rock this out.
I agree.
Okay, I'm going to count it off. One, two, three, four.
Whoa.
I'm actually playing the banjo and the guitar right now. And I've got a big old drum on my back. Hello and welcome to the 15th episode of Shop Talk Show, the podcast about front-end web design and development. I am Dave Rupert, and I am here with Chris Coyer.
Hi, everybody.
And, Chris, do you want to introduce our very special guests?
Sure. This is a four-person episode again. We have two guests with us, both front-end web development extraordinaires from Happy Cog, Philadelphia. I have Allison Wagner.
Oh, hello.
And Jen Lucas.
Oh, hello, part two, the quickening.
That was
what
my
if we just repeat
Twilight
ourselves
book
all day?
Oh, that would be good.
See well, you nearer, baby. Yes.
We're going to do what we always do on Shop Talk Show. We're going to talk about the news. We're going to jump a little hot drama on you. And you know what? It's been so long, you guys, that there's so much hot drama that we had to do a little pre-show just to figure out what hot drama we're not going to do, because it's like too old and just not good enough for you. And then we're going to do a bunch of quest Q&A stuff, and then we're out of here. So we got about an hour, folks. Thanks for joining us if you're joining us live, or thanks for listening if you're listening to us on iTunes. What do you think, Dave? Do you have any?
I was talking. I just wanted to open up with a quick question, but I was talking to my friend Logan last night at a JavaScript meetup, and he was saying he was asking why did the web developer quit his job? Why did the web developer quit his job? Because he didn't get a raise.
Oh!
Wait, what?
Arrays? The JavaScript function?
Array. JavaScript. Arrays. It works on so many levels.
Okay. Starting off strong. I guess the only place to go is up.
Yeah. This is... We're going to fly on the wings.
All right, I have a couple of links that are worth checking out for you this week in our news links follow-up section of Shop Talk Show. One of them is Tim Cadleck, who I just met because I was just down in somewhere, Orlando, for this BD comp thing that they did on there. It was a very mobile thing. Anyway, he posted a really good blog post recently that I'll put in the show notes called Media Query Asset Downloading Tests. You know, when you like, let's say you like have an internet page and you at different media queries, you like hide and show different stuff, but you can do it in different ways, right? Like you could have a background image and you could set the background image to none, or you could do display none on a parent element that the thing happens to be in. Like what of all those different weird cases in which you can hide show different things does the media download or not download? I can hear some Philadelphia behind me.
Hey,
sorry.
Philly's. How do you know it's not Texas?
That would be the sound of a tractor.
Okay, fair.
So I'll
look. Maybe that's just it's like it's beep if you love, you know, media query download speeds support. We are holding a sign out the window, and everyone's like, "Yes, this page is awesome."
Yeah, sorry. But some of the assets are downloading and others aren't. I can't control myself.
No.
And I was going to put a link in here just because I didn't even know that this was possible. It was called js2coffee.org. Somebody wrote like a reverse CoffeeScript thing where if you're like, I want to try CoffeeScript, but I have no idea what to do, you can take your existing regular JavaScript and hit a button, you know, and on the other side of it spits out your JavaScript turned into CoffeeScript. So I was like, that's cool. So you could just see what it might look like if you learned CoffeeScript. So we were deciding what hot drama to do, and we decided that we are going to pick, and this is a little bit old now, but it's still a little bit fresh. A guy wrote, what his name is Ryan, right? What is his actual name? Ryan Funk? Funduck?
Funduck.
Sure, wrote a post about our culture of exclusion, and it was basically about kind of the exclusionary culture of drinking at conferences. So just for like a note, I guess, I've been to conferences with all three of these lovely people, and we partaked. Was that
partakers?
Fair?
Libations.
Yeah. So I don't know if everybody read every single word of this article. I'm pretty sure that some of us did and some of us didn't, but like, I get, what is the gist of it? Would you say, Dave, did you read it?
Yeah, I read it. So he makes a valid point. Like, if you don't drink and you go to conferences, it's sort of boring. Cause a lot of the parties and stuff happen after the fact, sometimes the whole conference is a build up to the party afterwards. But he makes all these points that are actually not so true. He's saying, like, you know, if you don't drink, you shouldn't have to pay for people's alcohol. Like, but it's actually the alcohol subsidies make the conference cheaper. And then he says, I'm trying to remember the whole article. They're just a couple interesting
points. One of them that got me was the don't even bother to go to these parties if you're not drunk. Because you can have a conversation with somebody for like 5 minutes, but then everybody's so wasted that they can barely talk and move and stuff. I'm like, that's a pretty – I feel like I can keep it – I don't know. You know, there is always that thing where you're like, you think – you're not drunk, even though you are. And you're like, I can talk about the web even after my 12th beer. But you can't really. But yeah, I don't know. I just feel like
I'm not sure that's entirely true. They had a mechanical bull at JSConf this year. As all good. It was in Scottsdale, Arizona. So I guess as you do in Scottsdale.
Are there a lot of bull riders in Scottsdale?
I think so.
Let's go with
it's
yes.
A desert. Yes, choose yes.
At least but, name Scott in one.
But night. Actually, every photo, like twit pic, I saw somebody riding the bull was somebody I know from Austin who is a non-drinker. So you can still have fun. You can still ride the bull sober or unsober.
What do you guys think? Does he have a point or not?
I think it's probably better to ride the bull sober. So in that case, then yes, I do. The cost thing's a little weird. Like, and I think particularly about, like, we were just one of said conferences that we were at with each other was In Control down in Orlando, which was a very fun conference. And I remember recalling that they had quite a few of those, like, you know, those juice beverages that are like $5 a pop? And you're like, whoa. Yeah, big spender, guys. So I feel like most of the money there went to juice.
N.A.
And other things that are not booze, alcohol. So
I think
someone could make
like
a business out of matching liquor brands and conferences. And so they'll sponsor them in some way, shape, or form. And then the cost.
See where you land them. I wish we had more intelligent things to say about this, I guess, but
so here's something that's weird. I mean, like you cross a line, like there's a line here that's a very slippery slope. Like I don't eat meat. That's a personal decision. I don't write articles about that. It offends me that people are eating red meat or like bacon or a better, you know, actually that doesn't really offend me at all. But you know what does offend me that I've seen at conferences? Popcorn. I find the smell of popcorn to be absolutely one of the most disgusting smells ever created. And so when people are at popcorns in like a small, like eating popcorn in a small room, which a lot are not small, but conferences most don't have windows, and then it just reeks of popcorn, I find that to be more offensive than drunk people.
It's all relative. It's all relative.
That you bring up a good point. It does smell a little bit like diarrhea. Popcorn's pretty awful.
It's awful, right?
Yeah. We should refocus our efforts That's, yeah. Let's all refocus.
The chat room is 50-50 on the popcorn situation. Okay, that was pretty good drama. I like where it went with the popcorn thing. Good. That was nice.
All right, moving on. So, yeah. Oh, yeah, there's all kinds of drama. We'll just save it. Yeah, or do you want to cover one more drama, Chris?
Q&A.
Yeah, let's get down to the meat and taters. What is it? Faux chicken and potatoes. There we go. I want to be inclusive of the tofu and the potatoes of a Shop Talk Show, which is questions from you, the listener. So, and we have quite a few questions here. Not as many as like one of our rapid fire shows, but Chris, you want to kick it off?
Sure. This is from Mart Oosterveld. Okay. He says, I noticed that some of my colleagues prefer writing CSS in a single line. You know what we're talking about by a single line, right? You put the property and the opening brace and all the property and values all on one big line, line after line. I like to use one line for each property. Could you tell me what method you are using and what are the pros and cons for using it, all the properties on a single line? He's saying his coworkers sometimes don't do that or whatever. It's just one of these things like semicolons are not in JavaScript or tabs versus spaces. It's one of these like classic arguments, single line versus double line. I thought we'd put it in there and kick it off. How does Happy Cog do it?
I'm with his coworkers. I'm a single line fan.
Single line forever.
Single line. I'm gonna get that tattooed across my belly.
Do you have reasons single for line. Why?
I think there's a couple. I understand. I think with traditional CSS and possibly changes if you're using any sort of if you're using less or sass, and I can understand why that would be an exception to this. Okay. But traditionally, I think it's easier to scan as you're going down and not scroll as much, and especially if you don't have any expanding and contracting text editors.
Okay, this is for single line? You're trying to give it a props, or is this for multi-line?
No, I like single line, because then you can tab also. So you can tab your selectors so that you can see the sort of the specificity.
Yeah, you can just see a lot more selectors on a single page.
Yes, and I like that.
Oh, so I thought I understood you wrong. You're arguing for single line.
Single line.
Yes.
Single line.
Really? Allison, too?
Yeah. Very much so.
So much beauty
in single line CSS.
It's like a plastic bag.
I'm really into it. I don't know. Yeah.
You know, like, can you deal with looking at like four pages width-wise of like... like a gradient declaration? That's an awful lot to pack into a single line.
Oh, that's a great point that you brought up. So we have exceptions. Isn't there always an exception? So we usually do all your traditional old CSS 1 and 2 properties on single line. And then if you're getting into longer CSS 3 properties declarations, we drop those down to multi-line and they go after.
We've been using the preprocessors recently, so we haven't even had to worry about that. We're just
doing rock your includes.
Extend. Yeah. So that falls right in line with single line. Thank gosh.
Nice.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure we were going to get anybody backing up single line. It feels like it's so much more common for whatever reason to do the multi-line thing. I don't know. What do you do, Dave?
I'm tempted to stop the show right here. I'm appalled. I am multi-liner. Just if it's like one property, then yeah, I'll just bundle them or like do single line. But if it's more than one property, I multi-line.
I used to be single and I went multi. And I'm not trying to be too cool for school or anything, but what I find mostly is that when you're changing CSS in a project that's growing and so that is already established, so it's kind of a big old file of CSS already, but I usually kind of know what I'm looking for, and I end up just doing command F. You know, I'm like command F dot tabs, and it'll just jump the page down to wherever dot tabs are, because that's the thing that I'm looking for and then I plan to work on and whatever. But I can see there is I like the information density thing in single line. There's just a lot on the page.
Yeah, I understand the, you know, the find, but if I know that I've got like a module with styles all bundled together for like, I don't know, some sort of call out, I know I can browse really easily and see like call out A when I can see all those selectors really next to each other. And especially if we're working together. What's that?
Is it like, do you have like a style guide at HappyCog that everyone must adhere to or meh?
We essentially do. We, you know, and we also sit really close to each other. So, and we meet often. We have these developer lunches, we call them, where we sit and eat lunch and talk about development. And it's very clever. And so what we'll do is if we ever want to make changes to something like this, we sort of discuss why or how we found it easier and see if the team's on board. And then, you know, that way when we're passing off files to each other, we all write pretty much.
You talk with other human beings in your office to share information in which to work more efficiently.
It's crazy.
I know. It's so weird.
We're revolutionizing. Again,
I'm uncomfortable here.
There was a question in the chat room that says, how do you comment such with single line? And I think he was saying, like, I don't know, a lot of times in my style sheets, I'll have, like, Z index is 118, and I'm like, dang, I better explain that because that's a little weird. So I'll put a slash star. I did this because this other menu is Z index 117, and I wanted to make sure it was one high or whatever. Like, explain what I mean. Do you guys use a lot of CSS comments?
We usually will put them the line above it.
Okay.
Or
yeah, line above, line above,
line above.
So sometimes we'll like, and we do this with like our JavaScript functions too, where like you'll have a chunk of comments before like what you're about to do. So, you know, if you're tackling the footer, you'll be like, here's why I did this in the footer, and put it all in one nice readable paragraph as opposed to broken up comments throughout. We sort of tell more of a story to each other.
That's actually cool. If you like have a well-documented module, That makes sense. Then it's like a function. You're like you're applying a function to something.
Pretty much. Yes.
That's cool. Let's hear Ingacio Chavez sent in an audio question.
Here we go.
Hey guys, great show you have here. This question is for Jen and Allison about front end development and more specifically about JavaScript. How deep is your knowledge on JavaScript and how much of this knowledge do you actually apply in your daily jobs? Are you like super experts on the matter and know all about patterns and crazy complex closures? Or do you like to keep it simple and not reinvent the wheel? How raw do you go? And what is the language or technology that you have the most knowledge in? Thank you.
Quite a few questions there for you ladies. JavaScript, how do you...
I think Jen has like secret clearance levels of knowledge of JavaScript, right?
That was a well thought out question. First of all, I'm impressed. I would actually say that I am very much a JavaScript novice, but that's because maybe I'm well aware of how smart other people are at JavaScript and they do crazy shit. And so, excuse me, they do crazy stuff and, it's always impressive. So I would put myself way towards beginner level JavaScript, but we also, you know, we don't do server side JavaScript here or anything like that. All our stuff for client sites is pretty basic interactions. You know, we do our client work consists of a lot of carousels, a lot of show hides, a lot of accordions. So a lot of things that basically you reuse a lot of the code over and over again. The other thing I'd add to that we do is we usually end up using like with jQuery because that's what a lot of our clients are comfortable with. And so sometimes we'll use plugins if that will make our lives and our clients' lives easier. The thing about us is since we don't do site maintenance as much, a lot of times we're handing off templates to clients to integrate the work themselves. They have to know how to use our functions as well. So we try to make sure that we reuse a code base that they'll be able to easily update and upkeep. And so if our clients are really comfortable with a certain slideshow plugin, or if we know that they're going to use WordPress and WordPress has a great one, then we want to make sure that we're giving them something that's easy to maintain.
Oh, that's nice. So again, you think about your client's needs and then react to them. That's revolutionary.
Who knew? Yeah. Allison probably has some stuff to add.
I would say, yeah, that I'm probably right in line with Jen, novice, just working on the backs of others with jQuery and that kind of thing. But yeah, I would say CSS is definitely my bread and butter. It's where I spend probably 70-75% of my time at HappyCog. Love CSS, so very happy in my spot.
I wish somebody beeped right then.
Yeah, CSS.
I think it's important to like know how to read JavaScript and BBL libraries. I think, you know, what you had mentioned earlier, Chris, about security clearance. I used to do JavaScript simulations for the government a while back, and you know, that was more a bunch of like object-oriented things, and you get into these deep, oh, I don't want to think about it. In fact, I can't actually really talk about it. So, I don't actually...
What's the password?
Password.
My password is password. Skype. I had to look up my password on Skype again. Skype has this like amazing... Oh, never mind. Sorry. They really make you have a complicated password on Skype. Their patterns stink. Sorry. I'm going to set Skype on fire on my computer. But yes, so I don't actually miss that. And I really like working with more, you know, making sure that our JavaScript is usable for clients, yeah. I think is our most important thing here. And also that non-obnoxious JavaScript to make sure that the user experience is good on the front end for people visiting sites.
That's good. It's like, you know, it's when you can get a lot done with JavaScript and also consider yourself a novice, right? Like I do as well. I feel
it's
like
true.
That's pretty cool. You can, don't be afraid, people. Jump in and
Rebecca Murphy recently wrote an article called Baseline for Front-End Developers, I think it was. And she's a JavaScripter. She runs JavaScript conferences. But
she's from Boku.
She's JavaScript, what would you say, savvy. So she wrote a baseline for front-end devs, and maybe that falls under hot drama. But interestingly, she had a lot of focus on JavaScript. Like, you need to know quite a bit just on how JavaScript and what good JavaScript looks like. And it was just her opinion, man. But
she was this really like long comprehensive post there. But yeah, go what?
Rebecca's great. I saw her give a talk. I don't know if you guys, it's online, I think somewhere. I saw it in Berlin. She did a talk called the jQuery Divide. And it's along like the same lines of people, you know, and the JavaScript code you're writing and things like that. And I think, you know, she's got a great point. But I think that there's also, people have been writing this stuff for so long that I think there actually are a lot of really great plugins to reuse these days that are easier for clients to maintain.
Yeah. Thousands of plugins. So many awesome plugins.
Raining plugins.
It is,
and they're not always the best ones. You know, like we used to write a lot of JavaScript ourselves because a lot of these plugins weren't accessible. You know, and accessibility is a really big thing here, and so we did a lot. But I mean, you Google things, and there's like 5,000 different accessible slideshows that like work well with screen readers, and you're like, this is awesome. Way to go, everyone.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I agree. So, and save time there. Although we did a podcast with Doug Niner too, who said, but also don't be afraid, you know, like maybe there isn't one, or like maybe I didn't even know there was a bunch of accessible slideshows, but maybe you were Googling slideshows and you couldn't find one, you know, and that would be a reason to rewrite one. I mean, don't be afraid to write your own either. Cause
that is very true.
Let's move on. What do you say? Harry Atkins?
Next question is from Harry Atkins. Hi, guys. I love the show. Wanted to know, I've just turned 17. I already know.
17!
17! I already know. Spring break. I already know HTML, CSS, and I've started some jQuery, and I've had to use PHP for some WordPress projects. What languages or frameworks do you guys suggest I start learning to better my future in my web design career? Oh, and a whole different question, is higher education necessary for our line of work?
I would just say stop learning right now. Cause...
Well, he already knows HTML, CSS.
I know, jQuery and PHP. Honestly, that's about all I know too, Harry, so you can just stop right there. No, of course not. Just kidding. It's one of these common word shop talk questions, like, what should I learn next? And I was trying to establish the soundbite thing, like, just build websites. I feel like you should learn what you need to learn to for whatever project happens to come your way, you know? Like,
yeah,
I feel
learn
like
on a project basis. Take projects that you're going to, you know, step outside your comfort zone just a little bit. Just pivot step. Just outside. Learn something new. You know, that's how I do it. That's how...
Beep! Amen.
I didn't go to school for web development, and I think a lot of front-end developers probably didn't go to school for it. Yeah, I went to school for communications and advertising major. You know, took one class on interactive media, and I was like, damn, people make websites. That's what I want to do. So I don't think higher education, especially with all the awesome resources online right now, Treehouse is fantastic, Code School, Code Year. There's so many really, really well done online, learning code base or whatever. So I don't think college is necessary per se. I mean, it's great for like the social interaction. I think that's important for people to go through school and, experience that, the, life milestone. But
right,
I don't know if they necessarily,
whatever.
What?
Grow up a little bit.
Be a
smarter, better person, possibly, but it doesn't mean you need to do it to make a website.
Absolutely not.
Where'd you go to college, Jen?
Which time? honestly, all I've got right now in my head is Winger 17. I just keep thinking, he's only 17. Yes. 17. He's learning HTML and JavaScript and PHP. Sorry. In other news, I digress. I went to Northeastern in Boston for as a communications major, and then decided I didn't want to do that. And then I went to University Arts, and then I went to Art Institute, and I learned a lot of tables. Yeah, I know. I was a little excited.
You use Daily now in your workflow, right? That's all that stuff's so relevant.
I took a lot of author work classes.
It's part of your story, right? Or
I did for me, but I'm also not self-disciplined. Like, I don't have the discipline to sit down and make myself do like 2 years of teaching myself tutorials online. You know what I mean? Like, this guy sounds like he has a solid basis already, so he could probably supplement. But if for people that are just starting out, I don't know if you can teach yourself on your own without being able to have an authority, like sort of to ask questions to. Teachers have answers to things that you're looking for. So when you stumble upon a problem, it's really easy, or I think it's really helpful to have face-to-face contact with someone that can help you work through things. I think that there's definitely supports and,
Seems like you must be some kind of teacher or something. Have these kind of opinion.
I've been teaching some HTML and CSS classes for Girl Develop It, which is a great group and has made me realize, how important it is to be able to sit there with someone and go back and forth and explain to them sort of the basics of things. I really think it's maybe be more important for introductory sort of courses, because once you sort of like know one programming language, I think it's easier to teach yourself another. Just sort of the whole principles of development that you start to learn can basically be applied to other things. But I think when you're just starting out, it's useful to take at least a course or two. I don't know if you'd have to go to a 4-year school, but I do think that there's a lot of importance in education and formal education, or if it's not totally formal, not just online tutorials.
Yeah, so we have a couple other questions. Yeah, do it.
I was just out of school, and a friend of a friend had, wanted a website. She's a wedding planner, and I took the job, and I definitely should not have taken it. But having someone, hold you responsible, having a stakeholder, really forced me to learn very quickly. So I think, Jen's point about being self-motivated, if that's not going to work for you, then, and I say this with trepidation, take a small, small project and force yourself to meet the deadline and learn web design. I was in Dreamweaver at the time, so, doing like WYSIWYG stuff. So it's terrible, but it helped me, I guess, break the ice or whatever. And you can go to the website. It's blushingbridewed.com. It's my first site, so hell yeah.
Type.
What?
Wed or web?
Wed. Blushingbridewed.com.
Ah. Well, Google auto-corrected me to find it.
2008, so 4 years ago.
That's so awesomer than my first website. You're so good.
Yeah, French script.
So yeah, we've had some other questions on Shop Talk of people even younger. You know, I know there's some 16, 15, 14-year-olds listening to the show and reading CSS Tricks, my other blog and stuff, that write in once in a while. That's cool. There's been a lot more younger people being involved in the web community, which is cool. And some of them are like, I'm just going to start my business today. I'm 14. I'm just going to rock this thing. And I'm like, that's pretty cool. But also, you should maybe continue to go to school.
Yeah.
And there are people like, people aren't taking me seriously enough kind of thing. And I'm like, that's maybe there's some ageism going on there. I mean, I feel like if you're really good at making websites, they should be taking you seriously. But at the same time, they can't just, you know, Happy Cog just can't hire a 14-year-old as their lead developer. You know, like that's, I just feel like.
What if they're Doogie? We would take Doogie.
Okay, would you?
We do have a booze cabinet in our office, so I'm actually not sure if that's such a good idea. Yeah. So tying everything back
in. It's just one of those things where you're like, you can be good at what you do, but it doesn't mean that you're like ready in all ways to be, I don't even know where I'm going with this. You can't.
There's other things I think.
Adults like skills.
Yeah. I mean, you're not just talking about being able to code a website. You're talking about being able to be in front of a client. You're talking about being able to interact well with coworkers. You're talking about being able to contribute to a team and be in a professional environment.
Deal
and
with stress.
Those are things you learn through experience. And, you know, I don't think that's ageism as much as just that's how life works. You know, it's like that's why there's a minimum age for the president. You're not going to have a 15-year-old next president. So I just think that you gain experience and knowledge as you go through things in life. And, you know, it doesn't need to be school, but I think you definitely need jobs and other sort of experiences dealing with clients, whether that's freelance or on a team and things like that, to give you a proper, well-rounded skill set.
We use Basecamp, so everyone interacts with clients directly. We have to put a lot of faith, and I think in all of our hires that they can appropriately communicate or effectively communicate, rather, with our clients. So there's that too, yeah.
No one sits in a back corner coding away as like a production person and then, you know, doesn't interact. So that's not how we do things here.
It's just a part of your job is the coding part and the rest is human being skills.
Human being skills.
I think college teaches you, it's not going to teach you how to code or probably code well because they're usually about 10 years behind, but it teaches you a lot of other skills that it's worth going to college for. I'm not going to tell somebody don't go to college, but there's a lot of skills you pick. People skills we're talking about. That's what you get from college.
I think you also do a lot of networking in college, which is nice, especially if in our field, is you can meet people that you can work on projects with. You know, if you're a developer, you can often get matched with a designer in college and work on a project together, which is really awesome. And you just meet a lot of people that can possibly help you further your career.
My coworker Reagan Ray and I were roommates in college one year. There you go.
Look at that.
Life.
I'm not just making things up.
Oh, man.
Shall we move on, Mr.
Speaking
Chris?
Of using tools like Basecamp, we have a sponsor this week. This is the first time they've ever been a sponsor of the show, and we gotta knock it out of the park for them so they continue to sponsor because it's a one-off right now. But the product
preemptive
is
beep.
I'm already starting a slow clap.
Harvest is the sponsor. Did you hear the clapping? And good, that is authentic clapping.
It really is.
I'm actually snapping.
I'm still going. Okay.
All right.
That's pretty good. So it's time tracking. It's a time tracking and invoicing application, right? If you're not in the United States, they serve over 100 countries worldwide with different translations. Their customers include Happy Cog, Kiva, Volkswagen, a bunch of big companies. And it's really good for freelancers as well. So can you just tell me how you use it there? Just for a second. What's the Happy Cog Harvest strategy? Click a button, track time.
Click start. There's also some desktop apps you can use for it to track your time. You can also track your expenses, which is very nice. You can take a picture of your receipt
No way. Harvest does that?
Yes. And then you don't have to worry about anyone getting mad at you because you've crumbled your receipts accidentally in your bag and they can't scan them. So you can just take a picture. Yep.
Does it like read? Does it have fancy? What if the answer is no? I'm going to look like a jerk. But can it like look at the picture of your receipt and know how much you spent or whatever?
That I only take the picture. I just don't take actually. The picture.
We'll just pretend like it does do that. Harvest can do everything. Yeah. Yeah. GetHarvest.com. That's cool. And so if you use code ShopTalk, you'll receive 50% off your first month. Which expires, I guess I should say, on June 1st, which is a ways out. So, Harvest, pretty cool app. You know, especially for you freelancers. Oh, okay, whatever. You get it. If you're a freelancer, you need to track your time because you need to charge your client for that amount of time. You should be organized and do it. And then you take that client out for dinner and you charge it to your credit card. Then you can take a receipt and then charge that dinner back to the client.
It's pretty awesome. The way Harvest builds builds invoices and stuff like that is really awesome too, because you can even do like proposals and then time against that proposal. It's pretty rad. I would
cool. So the code is ShopTalk, 50% off first month. Wanted to tack this in there. This guy named Ben Frain emails. He's writing a book about responsive web design, which it's called Responsive Web Design with HTML5 and CSS3. So we all know that there's the really good Ethan Marcotte book that's called Responsive Web Design that we all get, and so like everybody points to that, which is awesome. But it's kind of it's time for this world to blossom out a bit and have there be more writing and more talking and more examples on this responsive web design stuff. A lot of people like books and learning that way. I like it once in a while when I'm on a plane or something to learn something new. Ben Frain's book, yeah. Yeah, Ben Frain.
Ben Frain.
Yeah, he's gonna give away some copies of this book. Let's give away three of them, and the thing will be send in an audio question because you know we like those so much. Aren't those funner and better on the show? Everybody has to agree with that. If you want to win a copy of Ben Frain's Responsive Web Design with HTML5 and CSS3, go to shopdoc.com/ask and here's how you do it. Because everybody like they want to do it, and then I feel like they don't. So what you do is just type out your question, but be like, hey guys, I am just turned 17 and I know HTML, CSS, Java. What should I learn next? And that kind of thing. And be like, okay, I wrote it. Now just click the link below it that says recordmp3.com and just read what you wrote in a natural voice and then drop in the MP3 link. And then we can play your audio question, which just makes for a better show for us and gives you a chance to win this book. Got it? Was that clear? Did I do a good job?
Are we eligible?
No.
I'm out of here.
It has to be a question about sex hobbit, though.
Well, I got some of those. I got some of those. I have a perfect question about sex hobbit. Why is Jon Snow such a wuss?
He's not. He's amazing.
Sorry, everybody.
We disagree.
Sex hobbit is Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones is sex hobbit.
Geert De Decker has a question. It is an awesome audio question.
Here we go.
Hi guys, this is Geert De Decker from Belgium. I was wondering, why is there so much dirty code out there? I'm talking about coding style, you know, being consistent with indentation, white space, comments, etc. It seems like many people don't really care, but clean code is so much more fun to read, and in the end, reading code is often harder than writing code. Any thoughts on how to raise more clean code awareness? Thanks.
Indentation, white space, and comments. I'm on Yurt's team here, I think.
There should be more clean code out there?
I just even like clean code awareness. I don't know. Look how nice this code is. It's true. I like
maybe we should make... Because
you
wrote
that art in code post on CSS Tricks a long time ago.
Oh, I wrote one. It was called, What Beautiful Code Looks Like.
Looks Like, yes. Yeah. And that was influential for me. I mean, learned how to look at code like that and, you know, recognize, I think, you know, ugly code and clean code. I recommend that link out to everybody.
I should redo that because what it ultimately was like a poster size image. I remember, for whatever reason, this was, like, back in when Dig was still popular, that would, like, make the front page of Dig, like, every month. It would, like, people would just decide that that image would be popular. And they would never link to the article that explained it. They would link to the big JPEG, you know, which, and then people would, all the comments would be like, yeah, clean code looks like a JPEG.
Trolls.
You, whatever. But okay, so I think things like GitHub are helping the cause a little bit, because you're like, it's a kind of embarrassing to throw up a public repo with your gross code in it. So people kind of, because the people, other people see it, they're like, what do you think? How do we raise clean code awareness? Just do it and people will follow.
I mean, I feel like everything starts as clean code, right? And then people have these things called deadlines, and all of a sudden things start getting really messy. Or you have CMSs that take your beautiful code and make it gross. Like, I feel like there's a lot of tornadoes out there that cause some of this stuff that people can't avoid. And I think that kind of stinks for people. But I think if we all try from the beginning as hard as we can to keep it that way, it will hopefully stay.
Yeah, I guess it's not that hard, right? It's like pressing the tab key to indent your stuff. And like, what is something that happens during this crunch time pre-deadline thing that makes us, you know, fail on it? I don't know. What we need to come up with is some examples to look at. Be like, here, and you should follow up with us. And I said Geert. I'm pretty sure that's his name, right? Or Geert. Send us an example of something that looks like garbage, and send us one that looks good, and we'll do a side by side, and we'll try to figure out why the gross code looks like it's gross. Is it just a developer who was sloppy, or does it kind of look like, oh, look, he started strong, and then it starts to fall apart here, and we'll try to get into their mind.
I think you get, like what Jen was saying, you get into this pickle where you're just like, I just need it done, you know, so you just start coding fast and loose, and, you know, so you're using, like, terrible selectors or stuff like that, or you didn't spend the time to, like, find the selector, you just went to the bottom of the file and did important or whatever. It's happened before. And these are all things I've done in the past, but
clean code comes from within, and then you have to, I mean, have pride in your work, you know, like, that's where it comes from me, you know. I, you know, love CSS, so yeah, absolutely, something to be proud of, you know. And even, you know, after the preprocessor gets done with it and it's multi-line, whatever, you know, I still, you know, appreciate the way that it, you know, formats and stuff, and the original files are still going to look beautiful.
If you don't write clean code, you don't love yourself.
Yeah, let's go with that. I like that.
You're just like a little red Corvette of coding.
And editors should be able to help us with this a little bit too, right? There should be like, oh, you're writing HTML. I see you've screwed up your indentation a little bit. You should just be able to like select all, format this for me, done.
I mean,
CSS code. Yeah, go ahead, Jen.
I think Mark Hewitt, who works here as well, and I always make jokes about like once every 2 months about how much we miss XHTML2. And how much we, you know, we were hoping for it. And, you know, I think we learned for a long time really nice structured syntax with XHTML. And then with HTML5, it was like, write whatever you want again. And there's parts of that that's really good. And then there's parts of that that it would be really nice if we had to close everything and things just looked nice and everything was lowercase, which, of course, we still do, because I think a lot of us got in that practice. But for, like, 14-year-olds learning now, you can basically write whatever you want. In one of my classes, I was sort of teaching, you know, writing clean code, and someone didn't, like, they either didn't put a semicolon, or they didn't close a brace, or they didn't close their paragraph, and everything still looked good. And they're like, well, why do I have to? Because everything still is rendering how I want it to be, and this paragraph's red. And I was like, okay, well, now add another paragraph. And, you know, so they see where the problems become. But I think, like, sometimes you test, and if you're testing for specific code, it might still work, and it still might be sloppy code.
Right.
So I feel like there's just
rolls
little...
right into the semicolon argument to be like, yes. Well, it adds them anyway, so what does it matter?
Yeah.
Are you a pirate?
Self-pride was...
Code pirate.
I'm not even going to go there.
I think it's also, you know, I mean, you run into the problem where if you're working on a team that doesn't possibly work as close as we do, sometimes you don't know why someone put something someplace. And that's where, you know, Dave talked a little before, you start overriding rules and you start adding longer and longer selectors because you can't just be like, hey, Allison, you know, why is this line here? And Allison could be like, oh, it's here because of this. And I can be like, okay, that makes sense. Where I might be like, if I was working with Bob, and I see a line from Bob, I'm like, Bob, I don't want this to be blue. So I start like overriding things and not deleting things. And, you know, then that game happens.
That's a classic. That's something that needs to be blogged about more often. That's such a hard world.
It's like, you know, you just, everyone keeps fighting over who's king of the North.
Yeah. That's true.
Oh my gosh.
Well, so. If you're taking a dump on the page, like, somebody has to clean that up later. I mean, it's going to affect somebody. It doesn't just go away or fix it. So
yeah, I think another thing that can lead to that is, you know, if you're doing any design in code and you're like going along and then you change something, you may not remember to delete your old selectors that you're not using anymore. So if you're sort of running with things, you might not remember what was not needed and then you leave it in there and then maybe you need it back and you end up with this outdated document.
Correct.
Yep. Well, shall we move on to the next question?
Mark Senf asks, I've been a front-end dev for more than 15 years, but only recently I decided to get involved in the community, joining message boards, discussion, following blogs, etc. So lots of experience, and but just started recently being a part of the community more. He'd like to take that a step further and actually meet other front-end devs face-to-face. So one way to do that is visiting conferences, but that can be a bit of a challenge, traveling and such. Don't always have the time or cash to hop on a plane and go to California to hang out with some fellow front-enders. Understandable. Another way is to meet people here in Montreal. I've searched if there are any front-end user groups in Montreal, but no such luck. There are some user groups and conferences, but they seem to be focused on back end more than front end. So my first question is, do you know of any groups here in Montreal? I don't. We can ask around in a minute, but we'll see. If not, I'm perfectly willing to get that going, but I could use some help. I would like to get some education on existing conferences. How do I get my own conference going? That type of thing. And could use some support. So, first of all, does anybody happen to know of anything in Montreal in this group? I don't even know where Montreal is. Is that in Canada?
Yes, sir. Wow. Okay. Captain America. Captain America.
Self potato.
So we don't know of any there, but, you know, obviously
I don't know anything.
Google things,
they have a pop festival. It's pretty good. I don't know anything about web development out there. I wonder if he's been to meetup.com.
That's what I just was Googling. Where are... Girl. We must work together.
Girl.
That's awesome. So, right. It sounds like he's Googled around a little bit, but you try other things. Try meetup.com, for example, and find if there's other stuff going on. I would be pretty surprised, because I've heard of the city of Montreal, if there's absolutely no front-end meetup anywhere. Second of all, don't be afraid of the back-end ones. I feel like, you know, you're useful to them, too. It's not like it's such a completely different world that you're going to have absolutely nothing in common. I mean, we're all nerds that sit around typing keyboards and stuff. These Ruby guys will be more than interested in your front-end skills and their back-end skills, I'm sure. But anyway, if you want to start your own, it's cool. It sounds like you have the motivation to do this. You're looking around for stuff. You're thinking about starting your own. Absolutely do that. And if you do it, let us know. I'll give you a shout out. The Super Montreal group started by Mark Senf. And I don't know. I don't know. I don't even know what the question is exactly. Like, you're looking for.
How do I meet people locally?
It looks like on Thursday, April 26th at Microsoft Canada, there is some sort of reusable, maybe they're talking about grid systems. It's in French, and I don't remember how to speak French on meetup.com, but there is something coming up that I do recognize the CSS. But that is meetup.com/HTML5MTL.
There so, you go. Like so stuff does exist.
Look at you.
So there is CSS at least this. And they had something, they had a few recently too. It looks like they meet once a month.
There's the answer. It's number one. That's some actionable stuff right there, which is what, which how we look harder. Yeah. Matt, you know, whatever. Look harder and start your own thing and we'll help you promote it. Is that good enough?
Totally. Yeah. Sounds good.
Good luck.
Sounds good. Okay. I got another question here. Kind of winding it down, but here we go. This is from Aline Chin. How are you guys doing? My name is Aline Chin. I just had a quick question. When you guys design a site, do you have a full HTML and CSS reference handy, or do you know all of, most of the elements, attributes, properties, and selectors by heart?
I definitely don't have a chart. I'm not like writing HTML and then like turning my head 90 degrees to my poster on the wall that has a section, article, div. But that's not to say I have literally every possible thing memorized ever. How do you, so let's say you're, I don't know, coding up a PSD, guys. What do you, how do you know what thing should be what element? Is it just all locked in your brain?
I'd say most of it is in terms of HTML, but I do actually, I don't have a chart either, but I do find myself visiting HTML5doctor.com a bunch and the W3C docs with some of the HTML5 elements just to make sure that they have not changed their semantic meaning. And so I quite often, when I use things like that, will double check and be like, what did they do with the mark element again? Is that still here?
Is that a thing? What does that do?
Mark, it was for like, you know, highlighting things.
Oh, but, really?
Yeah.
Like a hot, like background yellow?
You could. I think you could use it, for like search terms. You know, if you wanted to like, you know, when you do on your search results, you could put the word in a mark element. I don't know if it still exists.
I don't know either. Somebody Google it. Chat room, does the mark element, is it deprecated or not? Okay. I would say that there's not that many of them, right?
No.
So, and a vast majority of what you write is pretty obvious what it needs to be. It's headers and paragraphs and M's and strongs and stuff like that. I find myself Googling for stuff like, oh, this is an address. Crap. I know I should use the address element, but then what's the fancy micro format way? There's no way you're going to remember that. That's, you got to Google that every time. The thing where it's like class equals something dash city to make it all micro formats cool. Do you have every single HTML? Let's bring up a quiz and I'll read it aloud and you guys do the quiz.
Oh.
HTML elements quiz. You get ready?
I don't like this.
No, yes, you do. Oh, there's a perfect one. It's called the HTML5 quiz. Let's do this. Oh, you just have to name them.
Oh, this one where you can name as many as possible in like 30 seconds.
Go, everybody.
No.
Awesome.
Paragraph.
P.
Give. A. B.
M. A. Is E one? I don't think E is one. It's not.
There's an F. There's an E. Yeah.
Hey guys, there's only 105 left. So.
There's a HTML.
H1, H2, H3, H4, H5, H6. Got it.
OL, UL.
H5, H6.
DL, DT, DD.
Nice. I bet a lot.
Table,
of people.
TR, TH, TD, T-head, T-foot, T-body.
These, I feel like this is cheating.
Yeah.
Sight. Block.
The cue.
Why is block? Oh, yeah, because it's not one. Block quote. Block quote, you guys.
I don't know. I looked up background clip yesterday. So every once in a while, you just end up Googling. I mean, you know, I use Google all the time. Find out things. Just like a quick refresher. You know, I'm trying to do something fancy or tricky, or not even tricky. Maybe it's just, you know, I need to check myself. So,
what is background clip? Is it? shoot, is it like you want to?
Chris, I'm looking at CSSTricks.com.
the background click.
You get a ghostwriter. You don't even write it, do you? Yeah.
Well, it's to be fair, it's from September 17, 2010, so. You know.
Is it the one about doing it with sprites? Is that? Oh, gosh.
I don't know. Background clip content box.
Oh, yeah. It's like if you don't want your border to go to the background image to, like, go up all up in your border.
All up in.
Or in your, you can stop it before the padding if you want to, the background image.
Yeah, so you can have your fancy borders.
Yeah, cool.
I use css3generator.com.
Do you really?
I do. I like the gradients. Huh. Oh, wait, they link out. So never mind. I always go there, and then they link to the ColorZilla.
ColorZilla, yeah, that's the
color. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, colorziller.com/gradient.
That's the one that's kind of like Photoshop, so you can drag the little pen.
Yeah, it's sweet, and you can upload an image.
No, really? Ooh, that's fancy.
Import from image. Yeah, it's awesome.
I saw another CSS gradient generator that was really cool the other day. I met the guy, and he's like, here, I made a gradient generator, too. And I was like, oh, cool, let me see. It'll be, you know, I'm like, is it going to be as cool as this one? Because this one's pretty cool. And I was like, whoa, it's really cool. And dang it, I don't have the link. But
I know what you're talking about. It's crazy. It's got all those crazy, crazy things. You can drag, and you can turn off all the filters on that right side.
Yes, that's the one I'm talking about.
That thing is nuts. It's like,
now we need to remember the URL. What is this craziness?
Oh, man. Come on, guys. And I were looking at it the other day. Anthony, the link.
Is anyone in the chat room now? No, somebody knows.
I know Anthony's listening downstairs, and I sent this to him and Mark the other day.
It's more about, you know, like this one is probably more useful, I dare I say, for practical gradients, where you're like, I need a couple of color stops. And I need to just slide them around and pick the colors and get it done. This thing, oh, I bet that's it. The gradient. No, it's. I feel like it's hosted on GitHub. It's something something GitHub.com. It's for, like, have you guys seen Leah Veru's crazy gradient gallery where there's like, here's one I made that's like a pattern of stars on plaid with a cow jumping over the moon, and I made it with gradients. And you're like, what? This is the editor for building those type of ones, because there's like, it's multiple background based gradients. So it's like, here's a complex gradient that makes stripes sitting on top of yet another complex gradient that does plaid or whatever. Anyway, it's awesome, and I'll link it up in the show notes. Sorry for the ridiculous teaser, you guys. You're gonna have to come to my website. I should mention less money. I got an email, Alan. I'm not sure what our arrangement was, or if they're still sponsoring or not, or what. I just thought I'd mention lessmoney.lesseverything.com is a conference in Tampa, Florida that runs back to back with the front end design conference that Dave is speaking at this
year. I'll be there.
Less money, right?
Don't you know, babe?
It's about, there's only 50 people can go, and he might even be sold out, so he might not even want us to be advertising it. And it's all about just making more money running a web business. So if that's kind of, you're like, money, more of it, learning from some guys that are hilarious and have done it themselves, go to lessmoney.lesseverything.com and check it out. All right, guys, how do we end this thing? Do we ask about how can they find out? Yeah. More about you.
Allison, Jen, how can people give you money, follow you on the Twitters, all of that?
Well, hell. My Twitter handle is Allie Wagner, A-L-L-I-W-A-G-N-E-R. AllieWagner.com. Those are my two majors.
Yay. Jen.
Awesome.
Allie Wagner. Jen?
And I just posted, I found that link. It's the gland.github.com/css-patterns-workbench.
Yes. That's this is so much better, too. Dude is actively working on this thing. This looks
awesome. This guy is like, it's nuts. Or girl. Guy or girl.
It's a guy.
Or girl owl.
Here, do you want to...
Gender politics?
Yes.
Let's discuss that.
So I am also on the Twitters. It's Jen with two N's, Lucas with a K, just to make things really complicated when I have to say my name. And I also occasionally write, hopefully more often as we are moving platforms, on thenerdery.net. And that's Nerdery, N-E-R-D-A-R-Y. I have to spell everything I'm involved in on the internet. So it's not a very good decision. I write for .NET Magazine, so you can read my column in the print issue every month. And
awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jen, Lucas, and Allison.
Thank you guys so much for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
It was worth skipping Chipotle time for.
I don't know about that. That's pretty words. Anyway, we'll take you out with me humming shoptalkshow.com. Oh, I screwed it up.